From Washington, D.C., NBC Television presents America's Press Conference of the Year. Meet the Press with today's guest, General Louis B. Hershey, Director of the Selective Service System, who's in the news with the questions he raised about the mental tests, which are keeping so many men out of the armed services. Ready for today's unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference are four of America's top reporters. Please remember that their questions do not necessarily reveal their point of view. It's their way of getting a story for you. And now meet Mr. Buckley Griffin of the Boston Herald Traveler and the Worcester Gazette. Mr. Lawrence Spivak, editor of the American Mercury magazine. Mrs. Ruth Montgomery of the New York Daily News. Mr. Marshall McNeil of the Scripps Howard newspapers. And here's our guest, General Louis B. Hershey. Finally, Miss Martha Roundtree, moderator of Meet the Press. That's our news panel for today and our guest. The news conference will begin in just 1 minute.
Life is something like the weather. Some parts are calm and beautiful, like a lovely day in the country. But other parts are as rough as a hurricane. To make sure that you'll be able to weather the rough spots in your future, sign up now for United States Savings Bonds. They'll provide the extra money you'll need in any emergency. Storm, fire, sickness, or accident. For every $3 you put into these bonds, when they mature, you'll get $4. Sign up for savings bonds where you work or bank.
General, are you ready? I see Mr. McNeil has the first question.
General, how do you explain the fact that there seem to be so many young men delinquent about reporting under selective service calls?
Well, Mr. McNeil, in the first place, I probably would argue a little bit with you about so many young men. It is true that there are a great many people said to be delinquent, but I want you to remember that we have been almost out of business for 2 years, and the American people, with the amount of the moving around they do, and with the fact that everybody thought it was not too serious to remind your draft board that you had moved, I think that is at the basis of the great majority of people. We don't know what our post office addresses are from day to day very often.
Well, now, for example, here this morning you had, I think, 22. Is it possible that 22 addresses are loused up somewhere in this board business?
Well, I don't think that 22 is a very, very small number. We deal in 10 or 12 million even in this little registration. And even if it's 300, even 3,000 wrong addresses wouldn't be very many. Mm-hmm.
Is it, it couldn't be, could it, that the young men that are going to have to fight this war are not very enthusiastic about it?
Well, I don't believe that, except when we talk for publication, that anyone is too happy about fighting any war. But just the same, when they got one to fight, they go to do it, and as far as my news comes back to me directly from out in Korea, the boys out there, with all that's been said, have been given a very good account of themselves.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Well, General, what do you think about all the young doctors who were trained at that government expense for 4 to 6 years who are refusing to volunteer, or at least failing to volunteer, when heaven knows if anyone owes a debt to their country, they do?
Well, Mrs. Montgomery, you, I think, are living up to the best traditions of the ladies, because you practically put me in the corner where you've answered most all of my questions, and I certainly don't want to necessarily come out defending the boys who are got their education on ASTP or V-12. I opposed both of those, obviously, as a bureaucrat who was in a different business. But I will say this, that the federal government did not put those boys, when they left the service, in the reserve. If they had them, they wouldn't need to be asking them now. I And I think it's all right to have the law, and I think we very soon will be taking measures to get them. But I suppose they're waiting until they're taken in due process rather than by volunteering.
Well, don't you think we should have had some sort of machinery where they would be the first to go rather than take these men who have set up practices?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. And when we had them back 5 years ago, we certainly could have gotten them to accept commissions before we liberated them.
What do you think's delaying their volunteering? Why are they being so, what seems to us, unpatriotic?
Well, I don't know about it. I don't want to brand them as unpatriotic. I think that they're waiting for the government to require their services. And while we do a great deal of talking in this country on volunteering, you know, a great deal of volunteering is about the kind that these boys will do in the next 4 or 5 weeks. That is, they'll volunteer when they think someone's going to take them anyway. And I don't say that to discredit anybody. But you don't pay taxes by a volunteer method. You wait till they pass a law and practically tell you if you don't pay them, you have suffered the penalty, and I think we're all a little bit that way.
Mr. Spivak.
Well, General, in the last war, you took so many doctors that the civilian population suffered. Why couldn't you work out some system so that doctors living near the camp could do part of their work with the camp and part of their work with the civilian population?
Well, Mr. Spivak, you, of course, have a beautiful question there where, again, you've drawn several conclusions which I do not accept.
You're not saying my question was feminine, are you, General?
No, I won't say that it's feminine, but I will say that perhaps I maybe better get in good with the ladies by saying maybe it's a little more inaccurate than the femininity would go into. In the first place, we did take some doctors during the war. I'd be the last to admit that a lot of doctors were used for other purposes than being doctors. But I am not so sure that the public during the last war could make a case of the fact that they did not have all of the medical attention they needed. They didn't have near all they wanted, and they didn't have near all they could pay for. But one thing in this country, we're getting to the place where some people have to tell a man that he ought to be a little more careful after he gets my age, if not when he gets your age. And I think that's asking a little too much of the medical profession. I think the medical profession ought to they ought to stay in their business, and I think some of us ought to stay and look after ourselves. Now, as far as having doctors serve in the armed forces and around camp, I think you are having some of it now because they are hiring civilians to give the examinations for most of the people that are going into the service. But you can't very well have a man in Korea and have him available to doctor around here in Washington.
Well, General, are you saying that the population in the last war were better off not to have as many doctors available?
No, I didn't say that. I might, if you pressed me hard enough, say it. What I'm saying is the superintendent of one of the largest hospitals in this country told me that he never feared during the war that we'd have enough attention for what people needed, but he was sure he didn't even have the beginning of enough for what people demanded and could pay for. There's a lot of people get sick now because they enjoy it.
General, I'd like to take you for a moment to the feminine question since you handle that so well. Chancellor Tully of Syracuse said women should be drafted and taught to use weapons. Now, I know you favor drafting women, but do you favor drafting them for combat?
Well, now, in the first place, I don't know. I don't like to be cantankerous, but if we're in a question and answer method, supposing you ask me the questions rather than telling me the answers I'm going to make. I have said many times that whenever it's necessary to draft women, I thought we should. And I didn't see any reason why that when it came time to draft them, we could. Now, what you use them for gets out of my line of business. I furnish people to the armed forces. I defer people to stay at home in the organization with which I am connected. And I don't believe at this stage in the game that I'm going to get into the question of whether they should be taught to use weapons or not. I don't think there's any question, but what we've had enough examples in the past that women in this country and others could use weapons. Now, I do object to this, though. I don't mind taking women for any needs we have, but there's no particular need of taking a woman and have to substitute with a man who is able-bodied for her place. Now, that I am not quite ready to go along on.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Well, General, don't you think that since women control most of the money in this country, that we have more to fight for than you men, so we ought to get drafted for most any job?
As a philosophical question, I perfectly agree with you, because I have felt that I'm getting along to the age where I've got to find some woman that I can replace so that she can get into more active things in this armed forces. I wouldn't argue with you on that.
Well, I'm not hinting that you draft me. I'm very happy.
Mr. Griffin.
General, coming down to the practical operation of selective service today, how about, for instance, occupational deferments? Do you get many of those?
Oh, yes, we'll have some. Now, I would like to say something on that, Mr. Griffin. We have hoped, or at least I have hoped, I think most of the people in my system have hoped, and I don't know whether it'll be the national policy or not. I think we can avoid a great deal of occupational difficulties if we maintain our ages relatively young. That is, if we stay at 25 and below, if we could get through at least a gray situation, certainly not a black one, but a gray situation by staying below 26, we'd have some occupational difficulties, no doubt, but they wouldn't begin to approach what you will have in the late 20s, early 30s, or the middle 30s.
Mr. McNeil.
General, are you satisfied with the Army aptitude tests, the mental tests they're giving the kids that you offer to them?
Well, Mr. McNeil, I can answer that, I think, rather quickly. No.
They're, in your opinion, turning down young men on these tests who you believe would make good soldiers?
Well, now that begins to get into a little complications, Mr. McNeil. In the first place, my organization is an organization that has to procure men. And we do view alarm any time that our pool falls very rapidly. Therefore, we obviously would like to have every man inducted that we send up. And as a former school teacher and as a person who at least was attached to the Army for pay purposes for a great many years, I believe that a test which depended on motivation wasn't very good when motivation might possibly be either dulled or absent.
What have you done, if anything, about getting the Army to change that test, to ease it up?
Well, obviously we've had a great many discussions with them, and the thing is not as simple as it seems on the surface. Because you want to remember, the armed forces at the present time, the Army, is taking men from selective service alone. And for them to have a different standard than the Marine Corps, the Air Forces and the Navy, who are engaged in enlisting and who are being helped at least by the pressure that's being put on by selective service, there is some grounds for the Army liking to feel that if these men that are not so good are to be taken, that they get a little more distribution than being all in one organization.
Have they changed this test, made it harder since you started into operation?
No, I don't think that's true. We had a GC test during the war that perhaps more people passed. I do believe that this was set up for recruiting times when you were trying to take out the best. And it's one thing to use something to eliminate people who want to get in. And it's another thing to use that same test to find out whether you're going to take a man who might not be, he might be neutral, shall we say, about getting in.
General, they're figuring now on a 3 million man army.
That's what the president said in his last speech over the air.
Aren't they going to have to ease up on that test in order to get those men by that time?
Well, if you took every man who could pass the test in all of our age groups, you could get them. I have felt that we could maintain 3 million men under 26 years of age, provided that we got our acceptance down somewhere a little nearer where it was in World War II.
What about physical requirements? Are they as stringent now as they were?
Well, perhaps, although I don't want to make too many statements on that. They've changed the dental requirements within the week, and that might make quite a difference.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Oh, General, why doesn't the Army consider drafting 4Fs for all those desk jobs and non-competent tasks that the Army has?
Well, Mrs. Montgomery, I'm sure that they could give you a great many tasks, a great many reasons why they do not want to do it. I hesitate a little bit for two or three reasons. In the first place, I happen to be an organization that's trying to get them to do it, and I don't believe that they would necessarily retain me as their advocate on why they shouldn't do it. I do think that they could give you a great many reasons, but I really believe that they ought to give it, obviously. One is that if 4Fs are going in, they would say, why aren't they divided to all of the armed forces? That'd be one of the first questions they'd ask. Another is they like to have interchangeability of parts, which is a part of the production line business. And the more people you can have you can use anywhere, the more fluid you are. Whereas if you have to keep some of them in certain places and use them only in certain places, then you've got to leave the men who can fight all the time up in the fighting if you can't change them back and forth. That's one of the answers they would give.
I'll let you pursue that in just a moment, Mrs. Montgomery, but first let's pause for a special announcement.
While our guest, General Louis Hershey, and the panel reporters take a brief recess, here is a moment for a special message.
Europe's children, epilogue to war. 30 million still hungry, 30 million still homeless, 30 million still cold and destitute. Countless orphans wander aimlessly, searchingly among ruins for the meagerest essentials to keep alive. But others, more fortunate, must also struggle for themselves, as war-weary parents slave long hours, receiving little and buying less in those few markets where food and clothing are sold. Statistics reveal, in England, children receive 1 ounce of meat per day, and only one small cake of gritty pumice soap each month to help ward off disease. In Finland, one child in 25, an orphan. In the Orient, one lonely Philippine hospital to care for the crippled. Capacity, 300 patients. In Korea, the mortality of children under 3 years of age, 50%. To aid these helpless children, contact your local care office today or just write CARE, New York.
Now back to Mrs. Montgomery.
Well, General, just to finish up on that, I noticed in the paper that during July, 58% of the draftees were rejected for mental or physical reasons. Don't you think that that's keeping our 4F percentage awfully high when we
yes.
take it to that figure?
I agree with you. And it went down about 10%. In August, but that isn't enough. Should go lower, no question about it.
And don't you think that during war, when we do need so many able-bodied men, that it incapacitates an awful lot of them to keep them at all these desk jobs in the United States when 4Fs could serve just as well there?
Well, that's really my story that you're telling, but of course, a lot of people are not quite sure that we're in war yet, which is one of the factors that entered into it.
Well, Thomas, what does it take to prove that we're in war?
Well, I imagine when you begin to go somewhere beyond 3 or 4 million, I agree with you wholly, but the first place, I do not represent, I don't believe, the average thought in this country. I'm probably a little more over toward some people would say, hysterical side. I don't think it is.
Has the president said we were at war yet, General?
Well,
I thought this Korean thing wasn't considered a war.
Well, your consideration on that, I think, would be fully as good as mine.
But no, but don't you think the people were told that we were at war and there really was great danger? And
you're
this was serious, that you would have less trouble?
I am not not in that field. I believe I better stay in manpower procurement.
General.
Mr. Spivak.
General, one of those anonymous officials of the Surgeon General's office the other day said the Selective Service officials who have been making the charges that standards are too high and that the draft rejection rate is running abnormally high simply don't understand their own statistics. All the hullabaloo stems from improper interpretation of the statistics. Now, the question is, have you examined those statistics and do you still think the tests are too difficult?
Mr. Spivak, there's no argument at all on the rejection rate. It's just about 60. They happen to put 15 out of every 100 that it's examined were turned down on the mental test. 9 were turned down on the mental test and something else, which left about 24 out of every one examined, and 6 more out of each 100 were turned down on the psychiatric test. Now that makes 30 out of each 100 that were examined, according to their figures and according to our figures, that were turned down for mental reasons. I think it's too high. If anyone else thinks it isn't, they're welcome to it.
Well, but General, they insist that during July, for example, when you had a 60% turn down, there were 30,000 men, presumably the best physical and mental men, who enlisted. And that if you use that 30,000 in your statistics, you'd only have a rejection rate of about 20%.
Well, I'd like to protect them on that, but unfortunately, the 30,000 didn't all come from the 24 and 25 year age group, and therefore wouldn't have very much significance if you took some 18 and 19 and 20 year olds and enlisted them, no matter what their physical condition. It wouldn't make much difference about the 24 and 25 year olds.
Well, now, General, one other thing that the Surgeon General Office says is that these tests are not very different from the tests in World War II, and that you had no trouble at all during that time in getting all the men you want.
Well, now, that, of course, I don't remember. The Surgeon General said we got all the men we wanted during World War II. We certainly scraped the bottom of the barrel. And one of the things that we tried to learn in World War II was that 5 million men rejected for service is too big a drain on manpower. We were not successful in picking men during the war. We won it. But 5,000 is too, or two, 5 million is too many to reject.
Well, mightn't that mean to you that something ought to be done about the civilian population that can't pass these tests?
Well, that's true, but after all, the scientific age, one of the things it's done, it's been able to measure things we didn't measure before, and we used to not know they were so bad and went ahead anyway.
Mr. Griffin.
General, suppose a great crisis came. Suppose war. Suppose you got demand for a great number of men. What would be the main reservoirs of manpower that they would probably have to come from?
Well, initially, in our present age group, you have to release more people that are now deferred for dependency, and you have to begin to take veterans. Those are the first two groups in those under 26. And then the 18-year-olds have got to be considered when that'll be up to Congress, and following that, you've got from 26 on up to 45, and you'll have to search in those ages.
Mr. McNeil.
How many veterans in this in the present age group that you're now drafting, how many veterans?
2,600,000. No, we're not drafting them.
No, I know
you're
drafting
in that age group. That's right. 2,000,006.
And there are 2,000,006 available.
There are 2,000,006 in that group.
You don't know how many are married or
most of them.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Montgomery.
Well, does it take Ms. Rondre, you can't draft married people now.
That is not dependent on law. The president can change that.
Oh, I see. Is he going to?
I can't answer for him.
Did you ask him to?
I haven't yet.
When are you gonna?
That would be telling.
Well, tell. This is a darn good place to tell.
Yes, but you know what? I am a staff officer. And normally a staff officer tells his boss before he starts telling
him. Well, I'm just a reporter asking questions.
That's right. And it's, of course, a very rather confidential place, too.
Yes.
Mrs. Montgomery now.
General, do you think Uncle Sam has the right to draft young men without passing an excess profits tax?
Oh, yes. I don't even think about an excess profits tax. But you could, if you're going to wait until everyone has everything done in this country they want before we save our lives, you'll probably lose it.
Are Britain and France drafting at the same rate we are?
I don't know if they're drafting at the same rate. Of course, they've been drafting much longer than we have. And it's one of the strange things that England, which Great Britain up until a few years ago, ordinarily never took them in by conscription, even in war. I think, I may be wrong on this, but my last remembrance was that 40% of the present English or the British force is by draft.
Well, do you think our allies are doing their share on this as we pitched in to help them in the last...
Well, one thing about it, they've kept me so busy the last couple of months that I haven't been solving the State Department's problems. I'm afraid I wouldn't want to speak on it.
You've been staying out of trouble, huh?
No, not necessarily, but I can get trouble without going so far afield.
Mr. Spivak.
General, about a week ago, Mr. Vinson asked you to compile a list of rejections by states for the committee to study, because about a quarter of the rejections have been for mental reasons. Has that list been compiled yet?
It has been compiled. That is, it's in the process. I suppose it's at least 95% done. I have talked to Mr. Vinson once since he asked for it, and there were two reasons why we didn't do too much about it then. One was that Congress was pretty busy otherwise, and secondly, we had a few more states that weren't in it.
Well, General, in your judgment, from what you've seen, does it indicate to you that those mental tests ought to be changed?
Well, I've had that opinion, and I haven't changed it.
Well, I just wondered whether the statistics confirmed your original opinion.
In my estimation, it confirms it. Now, if you saw the statistics, maybe with your analytical mind, you might agree with me and you might disagree. You see, that's what makes horse races, is to look at the same thing and disagree as to the end.
General, I'm sure I'd agree with you. But one
Thank
more...
you very much. I've had some trouble getting some people to agree on that.
One more question. There's been a story around in rumor circles that the president has asked you to soft pedal your criticism of these mental tests and the physical tests. Is there any truth at all in that?
Well, I don't believe I'm going to answer that. I could, but I'm not going to.
Mr. Griffin, did you have a question?
Well, I had a very, very general question. General, I think I heard you say some while ago that you, in this selective service, you don't only need laws, you need a good deal of human understanding. I wondered if you'd care to comment on that for a second.
Well, what I was thinking about, when we ran 2 years ago, we had enough laws to make criminal out of a great many people if they neglected, for instance, to report that they were married or they were divorced or that they had a new post office address or something like that. And I have felt at the time we weren't taking anyone. You just couldn't compel people to meet those standards. Now, we started into business again, and the things that we'd overlook a year ago or 6 months ago, you couldn't think of overlooking now. And, of course, as far as that goes, Selective Service hadn't always succeeded, but one of the things we tried to think is each person was a human being. Each person had a different situation than anybody else, and therefore we ought to hear him out on what he thought about his situation.
Mrs. Montgomery. General, do you agree with the present plan of deferring college students during their year in school?
Well, Mrs. Montgomery, I have some grave doubts about that, but I have 3 or 4 years of the last war where they did, and I have had a great many people since the war spend a great deal of time writing about how scientists and everyone else were deprived of the chance to look out for the nation. I don't happen to believe it, but I do believe that we ought to defer some people to extend their education. The most difficult thing in the world is to defer the few that you ought to without everyone climbing onto the wagon.
But isn't there a little danger in that setup of penalizing the poor in favor of the rich as they used to do in the...
Well, of course, it isn't necessary. Many of us went to college, we're a long ways from being rich. And I don't think it necessarily follows. I know a great many people, and I'm not very well, I don't know rich people very often. I don't think that argument is too good. I do believe that any time you let that person stay behind, it ought to be from government.
Sorry, General Hershey, I have to interrupt. Our time is up. Thank you for being with us. We'll hear about next week's guest in just a moment.
This is the life of an aviation cadet in your United States Air Force. After 6 months basic training, cadets selected for single-engine advanced school begin a thorough indoctrination in the famous F-80 jet fighter. You'll progress by careful stages, from captive airs, which simulate actual flying conditions without ever leaving the ground, to your first real jet flights with an instructor in the two-seat trainer version of the Shooting Star. Before long, you'll be getting the final briefing for your solo flights in a jet plane and the in-flight training which will lead to your graduation and your commission as an officer in the United States Air Force. If you have 2 years or more of college, visit your nearest U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force recruiting station or Air Force base. Find out for yourself if you can qualify as a United States Air Force aviation cadet.
Next week, NBC Television will again present America's press conference of the air, Meet the Press. Be sure to join us then when our guest will be Sister Kenny, who has become one of the most controversial figures in medical history, but whose contribution to the treatment of infantile paralysis has been widely acclaimed. Now, good afternoon for Mr. Buckley Griffin, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Mrs. Ruth Montgomery, Mr. Marshall McNeil, Miss Martha Roundtree, General Louis B. Hershey. Meet the Press has come to you from the Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. ¶¶